Team Time.
Hi, welcome to Team Time. I'm your host, Debbie Waith, and I'm here to share with you a series of podcasts aimed at supporting those leading and in teams. I'm going to share my personal story as a woman who has led many teams in large organisations and in several countries. I've also been coaching leaders and teams for over 10 years, and I'll draw on this experience to support your journey as a leader and all the other hats that you might wear. I wanted to speak this week about connection, and in particular, the difference between connection and interaction. It struck me recently, in part because of how I've been feeling and in part because of what I'm hearing others say to me. And I think we're at this stage during this pandemic. You know, it's late June, it's been going on since March, and circumstances have been changing this last few weeks. Retail went back from the 15th of June, non-essential shops were allowed to open again, and people are getting some clarity, at least in terms of when their offices or works are expected to return to the office, if they're expected. And it seems to be quite a varied set of dates in terms of, you know, phased returns, some from next week and some from not till next year. And the reason I want to talk about connection is in relation to just the length of period that we've been working in this sort of different way, if you like, which has had an element of enforcement to it in terms of, you know, those that we've been enforced not to be with, and that includes our families, our friends, and of course many of our workmates, and those that we've been enforced to spend more time with, and the consequent impact of not just those restrictions, but the wider sort of sense of uncertainty of what might be the longer term impacts of this, you know, from a health perspective, societal, economic, as well as, you know, what's going to happen in my team, in my organisation, and in my family. The distinction I make between interaction and connection is that interaction relates to, you know, sort of situation or a reason that a number, you know, two or more people come together with the intention of, you know, producing something or there being an outcome of some form. Connection, however, relates more to the relationship and the depth of understanding in that relationship. And, you know, we've probably all read and heard more about this, you know, phrase of Zoom fatigue, or, you know, whatever software it is that you happen to use. And there does seem to be some reality to, you know, we're not used to looking at a camera for prolonged periods of time. You know, the more natural interaction is that we hold eye contact with a number of different people and we're constantly kind of moving and responding to what we see. And of course, when we're on a platform like Zoom, that level of interaction changes, and absolutely that level of connection changes. And I guess the reason for really exploring, you know, the distinction between interaction and connection is that there was clearly a priority in the early period toward interaction, because, you know, quite frankly, whether it was businesses or healthcare, or even within our sort of family situations, we needed to understand, you know, what was going to happen next and to be making plans for coping and managing through this period. I think one of the unintended, you know, sacrifices of that prioritizing the interaction is that we put to the side the quality of the connection. And the reason that I want to just pause at this point, you know, during the pandemic is, you know, so we're at this period in June, the summer ahead of us. And I think, you know, the predictions are certainly in the United Kingdom that summer months will help us in relation to the virus in terms of people being more outdoors and the virus not able to spread as easily outdoors. And of course, then, you know, the forecast that there could well be a second wave as we look into winter. But I think there's this sort of undercurrent brewing, you know, and I don't know if this is sort of a secondary impact or a separate illness in itself. But is the second wave coronavirus, or is the second wave the impact of the first wave of coronavirus? And it's the result of, you know, each of us individually and collectively having to deal with the level of stress and anxiety that this type of situation breeds, if you like. And my worry is that unless we focus more at this point on the quality of the connections, as well as interaction, but really turning our attention to the quality of connection with our home team and with our work team, then we might not be setting ourselves up well. And we may not see, you know, just how fragile some people feel at this point. I joined a webinar this past week, which had as its speaker Professor Bob Waldinger of Harvard Medical School. And Bob is the director of what is believed to be the longest running study that is interested in the predictors of a healthier and happier life. And, you know, Bob was talking us through what some of those factors were and how the study or research had been conducted. And actually they're on to their second generation now, as the study was originally started in 1938, and actually involved, you know, another sort of side topic, but it involved only white men, which of course, you know, a lot of research from history has done. And they realised that that's not, you know, generalisable, if you like. But they have since done further studies to try and better understand, you know, differences in gender, differences in race. And so far, according to Bob, they found that there's more similarities than there are differences. But the interesting thing about this study, so for a start, just the longevity of it, you know, 75 years, they followed the same young men through till their passing. And then they have continued the study with their children and then their children's children. And they're interested in understanding, you know, the quality of the physical health, the quality of relationships, mental health, work, you know, trying to get a good sense of life, if you like. And what they find is that, you know, once the basic needs have been taken care of, the most important thing in the prediction of, you know, a healthy, happy life was the strength of people's relationships and friendships. And they had impacts both physically, physiologically, and mentally. So as much as, you know, we can't necessarily have understood why, there was better results, if you like, in relation to heart disease, diabetes, and even arthritis. And it just, you know, got me thinking, and as you can imagine, there were some questions that we had in relation to, well, you know, if it's about the quality of our relationships, what is this period of the pandemic doing in respect of our health and our happiness? And, you know, I think it gives us all pause for thought, because of course that isn't a question that can be answered at a government or organizational level. It's answered more close to home. It's answered by you and me and, you know, who we work with and who we work for, in terms of what are the quality of relationships that we have and how do we invest in those relationships. I would ask you to consider, you know, if you think of a typical week for yourself in the last 4 to 8 weeks, what proportion of your time have you spent to connect, whether it's with your work team, your home team, and those dear to you, versus interacting that's in pursuit more of a task or an outcome? And if your sense is, actually, I probably haven't spent much time connecting, my encouragement would be, before we do start to take breaks for the summer, that you spend some time, you make some time to really connect with those people in your team, even people in your home team that are sitting probably only a few rooms away, but we get caught up in the logistics of daily life, of juggling homeschooling and, you know, shopping and housework and maintenance and all the things that, you know, distract us from recognizing that actually, you know, I didn't actually spend time asking how he or she was. The other factor that was talked about in relation to health, happiness, and the pandemic was the impact of high conflict to our health, both physically and mentally. And one of the aspects that I thought was very interesting in relation to this situation is that it doesn't need to be conflict involving you as an individual. It can be at a societal or an environmental level, and we still absorb the pain, the anger, the hurt, the frustration of others. And yet, because it's not something involving us directly, it's not necessarily something within our gift, our agency to change, or certainly feel as though it's within our gift to change. You know, the last 3 months and the last 4 weeks in particular, there's been a number of issues at a societal level which in many ways have highlighted the fragmentations in our society. And, you know, there's many that are polarizing the rights and wrongs of debates. And an expression that I heard was the need to calm the inflammation of our differences so that we could attend to what brings us together. And in this period, whilst we are, you know, enduring in many ways such an exceptional period, that we all have to a degree be sense making, what does this mean for me, what might be longer term effects, I think just recognizing the environmental impact that is on all of us is something to consider for each of your team members at home and at work, and perhaps being quite explicit about how it feels during this period. So what can we do? If I recognise I do need to better connect with others, where do I start? Well, this might sound a little strange, but I'm actually going to suggest that you start with yourself. I think many people, and often in particular women, find the concept of self-care quite hard, in that, you know, there's so many other things to be doing with our time. To devote it to ourselves can lead to a lot of guilt, and certainly not in, you know, it's not to say we don't do the activities, but we can be sat there thinking we should be doing something else. And I think one of the things that you know, I genuinely think has real credence is, you know, that self-care isn't selfish. It underpins a better relationship with another. The little line that's used when we're on aircrafts, you know, put on our own oxygen mask before we attempt to help others, is very true, because there's only so far we can go without that oxygen. And it's basics, you know, it's not things that we need to go and buy equipment for. Although, you know, we're always drawn to see that new yoga pants or You know, if only that workout will be the one that will help me get back on the, you know, on the treadmill again. But it's the basics of eating well, sleeping well, exercise, and practices that rejuvenate rather than obliterate my consciousness. I talked before with you that I have a meditation practice, and I have to admit, I'll be honest with you, the last few weeks I've really struggled to keep up with it. And I've been on a couple of webinar type things where they have done, you know, 10 minutes or so of mindfulness. And I notice how easily I find myself slipping into feeling so calm and relaxed as soon as somebody says, okay, so we're going to, you know, step into this, and I'll invite you to close your eyes and to form a comfortable position. And I guess because as I shared with you previously, I've done an 8-week meditation program with the wonderful Michael Jaskalson, I was kind of primed and ready to go when I hear those words. But what I'm finding is I'm not giving myself the opportunity to hear those words. And I know it's myself getting in the way. There isn't, you know, I can't say it's them, or if only I didn't have this. I know it's me getting in my way. But I also know how beneficial it feels. So for me, that's something that I will commit to do this coming week, is at least 3 meditation practices. I also find walking, art, journaling, and reading to be, for me, very helpful practices that are helpful to center and to calm the mind from, you know, projecting into the future or worrying about the past, but really help you to sit with the awareness of the now. Bob Wollinger, who is actually a Zen practitioner, he led one of the practices that I mentioned earlier. And the way that he described it was that we typically focus on our minds and our thoughts almost to the exclusion of everything else. I don't know if this will resonate for some of you, but he talked about, you know, we're so often for much of the time on autopilot, with this kind of internal monologue, not only opining on what we're doing, but how well we're doing it, and how easily we get caught up in those inner voices. And whilst we, you know, we have an inner voice often that can notice, you know, when we do something well, most of us have an even stronger inner voice that is actually watching for the things that we don't do well. And whilst we can kind of understand rationally and logically that this was an evolutionary thing, that it was for our self-protection, you know, in the world that we live in now, it's just fed by the constant feedback, whether it's through social media or our self comparison through, you know, things that we're seeing and hearing every day. And typically, you know, the comparisons aren't good. So we get stuck in those thoughts and that monologue. If we can find a place that feels more centered, that allows that inner monologue to be less distracting, and for us to recognize and have some perspective that it's part of what we do, but it doesn't define who we are, then we create some space to allow us to tune into the needs of others. In the spirit of connecting better, I wanted to offer you one particular practice that you could each do. And there's many so-called micro connections that you could think of yourself, I'm sure. But the one I really wanted to ask you to consider is the quality of your listening. If you think of somebody that's perhaps been on your mind, that you've perhaps been thinking, how are they? I'd like you to consider you know, what would it be like to offer them a genuine, heartfelt opportunity to connect, to ask them, you know, what's it been like for you? Maybe it's somebody who's been on their own for this period, or perhaps it's somebody who's due to go back to work or is furloughed, or maybe somebody that has been homeschooling and juggling work. Just ask them what it's been like for them and give them the opportunity to share their experience. We know that by talking about our own experience helps with connection. It made me think more about who within my circle might be struggling. And there is somebody that lives on their own and is elderly that I have relied on family members really to let me know how they are. And I haven't picked up the phone myself. And that is something that troubles me and is so easy to change. So I'm going to call this weekend and I'm going to ask her how she is and how has her experience been. And of course, if the thought of picking up the phone and calling feels too difficult, and it is, it's an odd time at this point where some, you know, in other times it wouldn't feel such a big thing. But at this stage, you know, there's an unknown to how will the other person be at the other end of the phone. You know, we've got the gift of text and email, which is far less daunting, but still it's reaching in to somebody that might truly benefit from being heard, rather than relying on them reaching out. It will always be more difficult when offering help or when offering connection if people don't feel that there's a basis or foundation of trust in the relationship, or if they are suspicious of the intention with which it is offered. If it feels as though you're asking me more to make you feel better than to really understand how I am, then you're not going to hear how they actually are. Sometimes we don't truly connect because we fear the consequences of sharing something that is either deeply personal or perhaps we're ashamed. You know, maybe we've got somebody in our family that we're really worried about, and there's a consequence, it's showing up in how open we are with others because we fear being judged. There might be a history of being let down or being unreliable. Or maybe it just feels too risky to share something when that trust has been broken before. Now, this is an opportunity for you to consider, you know, what state are my relationships in just now? Because what I have learned during the last year and a half, working with one organisation in particular, who was under great strain from having to manage, you know, a huge project that involved a very significant number of people. And what was lost was the ability to flex and adapt, because that mental capacity and that physical capacity had been used up through not just the work, but in all the anxiety and energy that went around power and politics. We've got to recognise what this period feels like and the unspoken fears that are lying below the surface. So don't go blindly in, you know, with good intent, you know, how are you? If in the background there is a relationship that actually needs some repair first, perhaps a better way would be to start with where the relationship actually is at this point, and see if you can build a connection. So what I wanted to end this week was to ask you some questions to reflect for yourself. And if you stood back and asked yourself, how well do I listen? If the test wasn't to recall all the information that somebody shared with you, but if the test was based on if that person felt heard, how would your response change? You know, there's various levels to listening that can be helpful to consider. The first is obviously, you know, what were the words and what was conveyed from an information perspective. The second is, what did I intuit and sense, body language, gestures, eye contact. You know, what did I feel was being said or being conveyed? And the third is, and what was the meaning or intention behind this? You know, irrespective of the words and the presentation, what was actually going on for this person? Perhaps if you could try these different qualities of listening, whether it's with somebody in your home team or somebody in your work team, perhaps you both will learn a little more of each other and also strengthen the connection. My final question is, what are your motives and interest in asking others, how are you? Particularly in a work context. If it was for their health and happiness, rather than for a task or outcome, what would the next part of the conversation be? I'm going to leave you with those questions in mind and hope that through considering these questions for yourself and with your respective teams, you have an opportunity to build greater connection as well as interaction with those people that are important to you in your home team and in your work team. And through this connection, hopefully we'll all be in a better position for whatever lies ahead. And on that note, I'll pause for this week and wish you a very hopeful and helpful week ahead. Goodbye. If you want to share your thoughts on this episode or ask me any questions, you can get in touch with me on LinkedIn, Instagram or Twitter under Debbie Waith. I'll be posting a podcast every Tuesday, and I hope you'll subscribe to Team Time to join us each week. I'll also share any resources I reference on my website, Future You, under podcast resources.
Subscribe to Team Time.